Gonna try. Okay. Here we go. We're about to begin our 2010 5770 Haggadah 26. There's been different gears of the numbers. How many Haggadah insights? I had one sign that said 23, one sign that said 25, the one today was 26. I keep forgetting what number I was planning on doing, so I hope you forgive me. We'll get through whatever we get through, and it'll be in the ballpark of that number. No, 29 I never, maybe I announced, but I've never put that in print. Did I put 29 in print somewhere? Do you have a 29? Wow, that's bold. All right. All right, maybe there's a 29 somewhere.
26 in print.
Something in the 20s. Here we go. Okay. Okay. Basically, I'm not repeating anything I've said in past years. Maybe 1.5 Divrei Torah, only for the purpose of building on it, adding on it, not to repeat what I said last year. Okay, we begin the Seder with Kadesh. Kadesh. So the question of the Bava Varebi. The Bava Varebi asks, why does Kadesh come before Urchatz? Okay, meaning, in general, that's not a question if the Urchatz is really just a regular Netilas Yadayim. But that's not this. The regular washing is later on in the Seder. This is something else. This is like a purification thing, reminder of the days of the temple. So why does Kadesh come before Urchatz? Don't we say in general, Sur Meira Va'aseh Tov? Don't we say in general, get rid of the bad and then do good? Urchatz is washing away. Shouldn't you be washing, cleansing first? And then you can get the holiness. Kiddush, Kadesh, sanctification. It should be the Urchatz before the Kadesh. Why is Kadesh before the Urchatz? So the Bava Varebi, and it's a great way to introduce the Seder, the Bava Varebi is saying is that the Seder is supposed to begin really with you at your lowest. You're beginning with you in slavery and working your way up. But you only really appreciate how far and low you've gotten if you could for a moment stand on a mountaintop and look down, or stand on a rooftop and get a whole perspective of where you're headed on this evening. So that, says the Bava Varebi, is why you start the night from the Kadesh. You start the night from Kadesh because you're starting from this cliff, this vantage point, or where you can look and watch and see how far you've fallen. Once you've got that perspective, you're now ready to begin the Seder and go at Urchatz. That's how we understand Kadesh. It's a momentary elevation just to understand where you stand vis-a-vis your Judaism. Okay, that's Kadesh. Another Dvar Torah for Kadesh. This comes from the Maral. How are we doing speed-wise, Cyrus?
It's okay.
Okay. The Maral says as follows. He says the Seder has 15 parts to it. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachat. The Seder has 15 parts to it. What is that corresponding to? Says the Maral, it's corresponding to the 15 steps which ascended into the Beit HaMikdash, into the temple. The 15 milos which ascended into the Beit HaMikdash. So our Chachamim say that a table is like an altar, is like a Mizbeach. And that's certainly true on Seder night, when our family table is a tool which we use to achieve even greater spiritual heights. So similarly, he says, just as the Beis HaMikdash helped the Jewish people understand the divine order of the world, the Seder, which means order, helps us understand, remember, Hashem's role in history. So it's a couple parts to that. One, the 15 steps of the Seder is corresponding to the 15 steps which ascended into the temple. So it's another great way to begin the Seder. You're taking everyone back in time, elevating yourself into the temple. That's what you're doing, because you're going to have a Korban Pesach. All these things remind us of a time when there was a Beis HaMikdash. So it's essentially what you're doing. And the concept of Seder order, just like the Beis HaMikdash helped us understand the divine order, so too the Pesach Seder helps us understand how Hashem guides world history. That's the Maral. One more Kadesh. Now the styles are going to change in each Dvar Torah. You're going to get some Chassidic, some Pilpul, some Agadita. Here's a good Pilpul one. This is from the Stipler. Oh, I love this one. I love a good Stipler is always good. So the Stipler says as follows. He says, the halacha according to the Gemara in Shabbos 69b is that one who is haholech bamidbar, one who is wandering in the desert and lost track of everything, okay? They forget when Shabbos is, right? Think of Lahavdil, Tom Hanks in that movie, Castaway, whatever it was called. So you're in the desert, you have no clue what day is Shabbos. You lost track of everything. So the Gemara in Shabbos 69b says, Eino osa malacha el kedei chayav. You minimize the amount of forbidden labor you have to do every single day. You do just what you need to survive as far as breaking Shabbos. What about Kiddush and Havdalah? As far as Kiddush, you pick one day of the week, and that's your Kiddush. One day of the week, that'll be your Shabbos, that's when you do Kiddush. Okay, so the Stipler asks as follows. Kiddush is De'oraita, it's from the Torah. Don't we have a rule, Suffik De'oraisa L'chumra? A Suffik from the Torah, we're Machmir, play it safe. Why not do Kiddush then every single day? Why not do Kiddush every day? So he answers beautifully. His answer comes based on another statement, which is famous in the halachic world, of the Dvar Avram. The Dvar Avram, who was the Rav of the Kovno Ghetto. The Dvar Avram says that if you're unsure about the days of the Omer, this is a good one for after the first Seder, you begin the Sfiras Omer. By the second night, you begin the Sfiras Omer, so you could bring this up. That one who's unsure what day they're in the Omer, so you can't count every day in a state of unsurety. You can't do that. Because counting by its very nature has to be something which is clear and you are certain. You can't count if you're uncertain. I think it's 4, I think it's 6. It's not a count. That's not a count. You've done nothing. That's not a count. So says the Stipler, that's the same with Kiddush. Kiddush is sanctifying a day in distinction to the rest of the days. That's what Kiddush is. If you're going to make every day Kiddush, then that's not Kiddush. Kiddush is sanctification in contrast to the other days, and therefore it's not going to be Kiddush. Okay, that's Dvar Torah number 3, that's for Kaddish. Let's go now to, we said already Urchatz in the Kaddish Urchatz, we're going to go now to Karpas with Dvar Torah number 4. Dvar Torah number 4. Okay, the first half of this I've said before in previous years, I'm adding on to it. Why do we have Karpas at the Seder? Why do we have Karpas at the Seder? So if you look at the Gemara says, Kadesh Yishol HaTinokos, so the children will ask. Children will ask. Well, okay, if it's just to get the children's asking, that sounds like you could do anything. Why not just juggle or do a cartwheel? You could do anything. What's the deeper meaning of Karpas? So Rabbeinu Manoach, with the Dvar Torah that seemed to have become famous in the last couple of years, seen and quoted everywhere, is as follows. Beautiful. If you haven't heard it, this is amazing. He says that it's at the beginning of the Seder. So presumably, the Karpas is going to tell us a story of how we got into this mess in the first place. So how did we get there? We got there because the brothers sold Yosef into slavery. By the way, when you bring this up at the Seder, work it backwards step by step. They'll say, we got there because of a famine. Well, why did we go there? How did we get there? Play it all the way back, and you'll see that ultimately we got there because the brothers were jealous of Yosef and sold him into slavery. Play it back one step further. What were they jealous about? Because the coat, which was a symbol of Yaakov's love for his son, the coat of many colors. If you look at Rashi on the Torah, when describing what the coat looked like, Rashi says it was made like karpas. It was karpas. That's wild. Random word. He says it's karpas. And that would explain, by the way, why we dip it. Dipping it is like the brothers want dipped it in blood. We dip it. We dip the coat. Karpas. Okay, that's a Dvar Torah I've told in previous years.
What do you mean with it was made like karpas?
It means it's color karpas, he says. Color karpas. Okay, it's the only other time I know the word being used. Karpas, I mean the Megillah, you have it. But I'm saying, as a commentary, describe the coat as karpas. It's kind of funny. So Rabbeinu Manoach says that connection, because that's how we got here in the first place, because of hatred of brothers. What?
We thought maybe he said it was karpas because they used vegetable dyes in that.
Right, could be. Could be. But you see, Rabbeinu Manoach says that's the link. That's what karpas is supposed to symbolize. So someone told me today, Rabbi Asher Brander from Los Angeles, he told me today that Rav Goldvich, the YU Rosh Hashiva, added the following twist, that this then explains what the yachatz is. The yachatz, we break the matzah and put part of it away, that's to symbolize the break of Yosef from his brothers. And then it comes back at the end because you're joining them back together again, Yosef and his brothers. That's you bring the brother back into the scene. And that's why you have the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Ma rav tuvcha asher tzafanta liyarecha. What's it called? Tzafon. Asher tzafanta liyarecha, which is hidden to those who fear you. Those who come out in the end, which is hidden, it will be emerged, will be revealed at the end that this is Yosef. Tzafanta liyarecha. That's why it's called tzafon, the afikomen at the end, when you bring Yosef back into the picture. Oh, I didn't think about that. Yosef is safnas paneach. Beautiful, Mr. Banks. Beautiful. Yosef tzafnas paneach. Well, shkoch. That's why I brought a pen with me, because I knew somebody would throw in a zinger there. Okay. Beautiful. Tzafnas paneach. Wow. Okay, number 5. This is one I've told in previous years, but I love it for personal reasons. It's the only one I'm repeating. Now, the Satmarav. The Satmarav says, what's the Yachatz supposed to symbolize? The Satmarav says the Yachatz symbolizes that you're supposed to break away before you could get holy, break away and get rid of the apikoris, get rid of the riffraff that's made it into our group. You can't build a holy society with those bringing us down. Break it away and cast away. So whenever you say that, a modern community always gets, the blood starts boiling.
That contradicts your moment of inspiration.
No, so that's the answer. No, so when I said this in my class at MTA, in the high school, a student of mine jumped up. A student of mine, I remember I teach the lowest level students who've been told their whole lives they're nothing, they can't make it, got up and said, he said, you know what? We don't throw away that other half. Right. We guard it, we put it on the side, we watch over it, and we bring it back for the most important part of the Seder, the Afikomen. It's teaching you that sometimes somebody may need a timeout, someone needs to take a step away from the community, but you watch over them, you keep an eye, and you bring them back, you integrate them back into the community. It's a beautiful Dvar Torah on Yachatz. I get chills every time I hear it or say it. All right, now, and by the way, you could tie that now back into the Yosef. Just like the brother sent Yosef away, he's brought back in as well. You could do that. You could do a twist and bring him together. Okay, let's go to Dvar Torah number 6. Here we go. We're up to Halach Ma'anya. This is the poor man's bread. Halach Ma'anya. Okay, look in the notes from last year what I said from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. I'm not going to repeat it, but it's a good one. Now, Halach Ma'anya. Okay, this is the poor man's bread. So what do we call, why is it called lachma anya? Anya, right? Why is it called anya? So one of the explanations of the Gemara is lechem sha'onin alav dvarim harba. Lechem sha'onin alav dvarim harba. It's a famous line. We literally translate that as it's the line in which we use to discuss a lot, to answer a lot of things. It's the bread that answers up for a lot of problems, for a lot of issues. So says the Mozhitzer Rebbe. Great idea. The Mozhitzer Rebbe says, if it really was supposed to be a discussionary showpiece, the matzah, it should be not lechem sha'onin alav, but it should be lechem sha'omrim alav dvarim harbe. The bread that you say many things about, not onin, that you answer with. You're not using it. What are you answering with this bread? Sha'omrim, say you're discussing, not onin, not answering. So he says, no. This bread answers everything. Why? Because on one hand, we say, according to the Zohar, matzah is ma'achala de'asvuta. It's the bread that brings us health. It's the bread that brings us health. Elsewhere, we know it's machla de'minumtsa. It's the bread of faith. It's the bread of faith. So on one hand, it nourishes our physical needs, and on one hand, it nourishes our spiritual needs. When a person davens, what do they daven for? They daven for physical health, and they daven that they should grow spiritually. This is the bread that answers everything in one shot. It solves our spiritual needs, and it answers our physical needs when we daven. It's lechem sha'onin alav dvarim harbe. It answers it all. This bread answers everything for us.
Okay.
That's the Mozhitzer. The Mozhitzer Rebbe says it. That's the Mozhitzer.
And how does it answer it? By keeping the mitzvahs of matzah?
What? No, it's saying, by one hand, the bread is physically healthy according to the Zohar, so it answers our physical ills. On the other hand, it also fills our spiritual need as well, because it builds emunah. It builds faith when you eat matzah. One according to Zohar says both statements, by the way, that it's food das zvuta, it's a health-inducing food, and it's machla de minusa, it's a bread of faith. Okay. Oh, lechem sha'onin dvarim harbe it should be. What's the alav in the... sha'onin dvarim harbe. Sha'onin alav. What's the exact lashon? Sha'onin alav dvarim harbe. That with it we answer. No, but with it we answer a lot of things.
Yeah.
With it we answer. That's fine. Okay, let's continue. Here we go. Number 7. Okay. Then we get to, we say, kol dichvin yesei v'yechol. Kol dechvin yesei v'yivsach, right? The halach manya. Kol dechvin yesei v'yechol. Whoever is hungry, come and eat. Whoever is hungry, come and eat. And then we say, whoever is in need, yesei v'yivsach, should come and do the Pesach. Whoever is in need should come and do the Pesach. Okay, so here's the question. This comes from Rav Zalman Sarutskin. Here we go. Question number 1. Why repeat? It's like a repetition. Whoever's hungry, come and eat. Whoever's in need, come and eat. You know, it's come and have the Pesach. It's the same thing. Why are they repeating it? Why the repetition? if you want to say the second line is really an invitation, by the way, slow me down if I'm talking too fast. Give me just this sign like this. Okay? If it's really an invitation just to eat the Korban Pesach.
I'm sorry, I am going to just, if you could
yeah.
Good. Name.
Oh, Rav Zalman Sarotskin. Sarotskin, spell it. I don't know. We can make it. I can make a spelling for you too. Rotzkin. Good. Kol dichvin yesev yechel. Whoever is hungry, come and eat. Whoever wants, come and do vayivsach. We basically think that's the same line. That's question one. If you want to say that the second line is saying come and have the korban pesach, well then we have another question. The Haggadah was written essentially in Bavel long after the destruction of the temple. So how could that be referring to the korban pesach, the paschal offering? If this is really about inviting someone to eat, there's no problem with talking about the paschal offering, but having a paragraph that invites the poor to eat, come, have Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach's gone. What do you mean, come and have a Korban Pesach? So he answers like this. He says like this. According to the Talmud, the Gemara in Psachim 99b, the Gemara says you can't eat filling foods Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Why? So that you have an appetite at the Seder when the matzah is eaten. So you have an appetite going into the Seder when matzah is eaten. So that's the first line. Whoever is hungry, come and eat. I know you've been starving all day. Come and eat, right? Kol dichvin yesei v'yechol. Whoever is hungry, come on and eat. What's the piece of matzah, though, at the end of the meal? That's no longer that you're hungry. The end of the meal is when you have the Korban Pesach, the afikomen. There you're no longer hungry at that point. That's the Korban Pesach. So rather, that's kol ditzrich. That's kol ditzrich. Now just eat what you need. Now you have to be yotzei the mitzvah of afikomen, which is commemoration. It's a different line. The first line was whoever is really kol dichvin yesev yechel. Whoever is really feeling it, come and eat. Now kol ditzrich. Now all those who need it, come and eat. Meaning those who still need the Korban Pesach, come and yesev yivsach. Yes. Right, therefore it's not who wants. It's not who wants. It's not who wants. It's exactly why. Kol ditzrich. You need it. It's a mitzvah. It's not who wants. That's exactly his vort. Before it was you wanted it. It was kol dichvin. Now it's kol ditzrich. The end of the Seder, you need it. Thank you, Bella. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Oh, that other way flipping it. Okay, if you could find that for me, that would be amazing. Okay, another Dvar Torah from Rav Zalman Sarotskin. He says, you have this special need to care for the poor. Here it is. We invite Halach Vanya, we invite Kol Dechvin, everyone is hungry, come and eat, to invite the poor in. Why a special mention in the Haggadah inviting the poor? You always, every Yontif, the Rambam says you should always have over poor people, people who are in need. We don't make a special mention at the beginning of every single Yontif. Why are you doing it now? So Rav Zalman Sarotskin said there's a pasuk in Dvarim, chapter 16, verse 12. V'zacharta ki eved hayita be'eretz Mitzrayim. You should remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Meaning, Pesach is the reason why Jews take care of the poor on all the other holidays. Right here on this night, that's the reason. Why are Jews always inviting poor into their homes and every day? It's the social justice. We do it because Pesach is teaching you, you are slaves. The empathy, the feeling that you had felt, what you went through, that should be what tells you, relate to it. That's what generates your obligation on all the other holidays. And we learn that on Pesach night, because that's when we were slaves. Feel it now, taste it now. That's why you Jews have an obligation to always take care of those in need throughout humanity. That's why. Because you were once slaves in the land of Egypt. Beautiful Rav Zalman Sarotskin. This, by the way, Rav Aaron Cutler, to add on to this, you could add it to this piece. Rav Aaron Cutler said, this is what made Moshe wake up in Egypt. Moshe looked and it said, Vayar besiv lo sam. He saw their suffering. He saw it. When he really saw it, then he related to it. Vayar, you know when you say to someone, I see you. I see what you're saying. You relate to it. Vayar besiv lo sam. When he related it to it in such an intense way, it changed everything. It changed his whole life, his whole perspective on everything. Okay? That's number Dvar Torah number 8.
Was that 8?
Physical
suffering from the labor more than poverty.
Same thing though. But I'm saying the empathy. He saw the... Once you empathize, you yourself become part of it. You feel what it's like and you can't escape your destiny. That's exactly it. Okay, number nine. This comes from Rav Herschel Reisman, the grandfather of our member Avi Reisman. So he says as follows. He just passed away a year ago, and he has a beautiful commentary on a lot of the parts to the Haggadah. So the Chacham, this one I like. At first I didn't get it. I said it over to myself a few times, and it's a great one. If you say this one right, it's a beautiful one. Chacham Mahu Omer, right? Chacham, what does he say? Chacham Mahu Omer. He says, Maha Edus Chukim Umishpatim. The wise son says, what are these laws, these statutes, these rules? What are all these things about? Right? And then we answer to him, Ein Maftirin Achara Pesach Afikomen. The Pesach should be, the Afikomen should be the last thing in your mouth. Okay? So question number one. If he's a Chacham, he should know what Edus Chukim and Mishpatim are. He should know what the mitzvahs are. That's question number one. What are these mitzvahs? Ma'idus Chukim Mishpatim. You know what they are. You're the Chacham. That's how you got here. That's how you got the name Chacham. You should know already. That's question number one. Number two, how does the response answer the problem? And then they teach him a law. He's a Chacham. Again, he knows the law. You can't eat after the Afikomen. Both lines, the Chacham, what he says, and the response to him, sort of take away the fact that he's a Chacham. He knows these things already. So we got to understand the question and answer a little differently. So Rav Herschel Reisman suggests as follows. He says that, I know the mitzvah of the night. The primary mitzvah is kol hamar belesaper hareza shuvach. The more I talk about things, the better. So now here comes the Chacham, the wise son, and is asking, why do I need to talk about all these mitzvahs so much? These edus, these chukim, and these mishpatim. Why do I need to carry on about all these mitzvahs on that night? I know them. I'm a Chacham. I learned them. I love them. Why do I need to talk about them? Why do I need to keep talking all about them? This then explains the answer. The answer is, the end of the day, afikomen. At the end of the day, afikomen. Why? What's afikomen? The root of the word afikomen, according to the Gemara Psachim, is afiku man. Afiku man. Where does my food come from? Where does it come from? It's like the manna. It was them. They were supposed to have faith. Emunah. Manna is from emunah. Faith. They were supposed to have faith. Matzah is the bread of faith. They're supposed to have faith that they will get food tomorrow. That there will be food tomorrow. What we're telling the Chacham is the reason why you have to talk so much about these mitzvahs is because you're rooting in your heart faith tonight. You may know everything, but do you have faith rooted deep into your heart? Keep talking about the mitzvahs. Talk about the reasons. Talk about why they're here. Talk about why we're doing them. Why we still need to keep them in 2010. Build emunah. At the end of the day, the last thing in your mouth should be afikoman. Where does everything come from in my life? Where does the charge to keep mitzvahs? Where does everything, the food that comes to me in my life? That's the whole purpose to everything you're doing. The wise son doesn't always get that. He's so wise that after a while he's been doing all these mitzvahs, he forgets at the end of the day ultimately why he's doing it. Why? Emunah, because of God. That's the sole reason at the end of the day. Okay, now here's another one. This comes from Rabbi Lam's new Haggadah. This is from Rabbi Lam's new Haggadah. This comes also on the four sons, you could say this as. So he says like this, that we're often told as parents, as teachers, as rabbis, as friends, to be accepting, to be non-judgmental. And Rabbi Lam says, of course, that advice is correct. We have to do just that, but not always. Not always. If we're always willing to be accepting and encouraging and non-judgmental, if there's never an obligation to rebuke, to give a little bit of criticism, if as parents we never scold our children, if as teachers we just accept everything, if as a friend we never turn to a friend and give them some advice and help when they're messing up, then you do them a disservice. Then you're not truly loving them. Then you're not truly loving them. So how does this play into his commentary on the Haggadah? So Elam says, true love is manifested in helping the beloved to grow beyond his or her limitations, weaknesses, foibles, or failures. That's love. He says, remember that the wicked son of the Haggadah is still a son. The wicked son, the Rasha, is still one of the sons. He's still there. We don't throw him out. We don't isolate him from his community. And this is where Rabbi Lam's twist comes in. Rabbi Lam's twist is, you're not knocking out his teeth. Your hike et shinav. What Rabbi Lam understands that to mean is you blunt the edge of their teeth. You defang him. You take the edge off of him. You teach him sharply that the argument is fallacious or mistaken, or how you're going through life is hurting you. You take the edge off of his anger. That's what the blunting of the teeth is. That's what the blunting of the teeth is. The Bali Musar, by the way, the Bali Musar say that based on the Gemara, when the Gemara says that you have to give Musar to a friend even 1,000 times. So the Bali Musar explained that as, what that means is, the Musar that you have to give your friend, you should break it into 1,000 pieces. Distill it gently, so you can give the right Musar with love to your friend, right? When it says give the Musar 1,000 times, it doesn't mean annoy the heck out of him. It means break it up into 1,000 little pieces, so you know how to give some good advice. Okay, one more Dvar Torah from Rabbi Lam. This is Dvar Torah number 11, and this is Rabbi Lam also on the four sons. And he has a very interesting look over here. He says, our generation has a novel child at the table, one that the Jewish community had not seen for years that exists in our generation. What is it today? There are many people today who openly violate many sacred Jewish institutions, yet are proud to be a Jew. Proud to be a Jew. They're generally good-natured, intelligent, sympathetic souls, and are in their hearts preciously Jewish. This is a case of a Russia without rishus. Russia without being evil. Perhaps such a second son should be called not wicked or evil, but mistaken, he says. The failure of such a Russia is intellectual, not moral. It's intellectual. He hasn't been taught right. He hasn't learned to understand. She doesn't see it the appropriate way. He says that's why it explains the balance. The Russia is not the opposite of the tzaddik, right? It's not Russia versus tzaddik. It's Russia versus Chacham. Showing you, Rabbi Lam says, that the way to define the Russia here is as I said. It's not that he's wicked as far as morality, because then the parallel would be Russia and tzaddik. But it's Russia and Chacham to show you that it's somebody who just has not come on board intellectually yet. He said, this son is not a metaphysician. He merely likes the comfort. That's what it is. And then this is his final twist on it. Very nice. Beautiful pieces in this new Haggadah. He says, the Haggadah tells us that the Russia was Kafar Be'ikar. What does Kafar Be'ikar mean? He's not an apikoros. He's a Kafar. He denied the Iker, the primary. He replaced Judaism for the secondary things. Meaning, he made the main issues of Judaism be the social causes, a lot of the other issues that relate to Judaism and love and humanity and Tikkun Olam and all that. He replaced Kafar Be'ikar. He thought that supporting Jewish causes and all that, that's the main thing. Not following the mitzvahs that God has given us and asking what does God want of me as he dictated to us in his Torah. So Rilam says, that's Kafar Be'ikar. So you blunt his teeth, the Haggadah says. Argue with him, debate with him, teach him, show them that you Iker, you flipped around what's the Iker. You've lost the focus over here. That's what you're showing him. Yeah. What?
It is out.
Let's hear, Yaakov. Why? Yeah?
Because it is it dissuades the people.
Right. He's saying it's not coming from a place. What he's saying, I believe, it's not coming from a place of wickedness. It's coming from a place of ignorance. All right.
Sorry about that.
Halacha clearly sees a difference in how you got there. We have a concrete concept called Tinok Shenishpa. Someone who has gotten there because Chazanish says applies to most secular Jews in Israel.
An American Jew, Jerokshin is
well. I hear.
Ramosha said there's no Shenishpa today, didn't
he? Ramosha flipped it the other way?
Someone told me that.
I got to see that. Chazanish declared almost everyone a Tinok Shenishpa. I want to see Ramosha. That'd be interesting. Okay. Interesting. Meaning like a kid who just doesn't know better. The secular Israelis didn't have an edge properly. Yeah, just, you can't blame them the same way. Like, what? Yeah. I'm saying you made it. Fine, you're one of the rare, the proud, the few, the Marines. But what he's saying is that in the old days, in the time of the Gemara, if someone broke from the community, you had to really be a chutzpah. Everyone around you is religious, and you found the way out. But he's saying now it's not the same. It's easier not to be religious. It's almost easier. Yeah, it's a miracle. It's hard. It's tough out there for a Jew. All right, number 12. Let's go to Avadim Hayinu. So we say, Mitzvah aleinu lesaper b'yitzias Mitzrayim. It's a mitzvah for us to lesaper, to speak about yitzias Mitzrayim. This is a simple Dvar Torah. This comes from Rav Reuven Margolius. Reuven Margolius put out a Haggadah. He's like a, he has a photographic memory. He just runs through thousands of Svarim. It's like a mind like Rav Avadya Yosef, and just writes quickly as he sees everything. So they put out his commentary in the Haggadah, and he says as follows. It's simple to clarify. I don't remember anybody ever doing it. It's so simple. He says, you see the words Haggadah a lot and the word Sipur a lot. So they're different words. They're different words. What's the difference between Haggadah and Sipur? Haggadah is to one who doesn't know. You're telling them something. I don't know who stole this watch. I'm going to tell you. That's Haggadah. Sipur is even to one who knows. Sipur is, let's all tell the story. We've heard this a million times, but let's all tell the story. That's Sipur. Sipur includes those Hayadua, those who know already, those that's known already. So he says, that's the pshat in the line. It's beautiful. Ki mitzvah aleinu lesaper. It's a mitzvah upon us to tell the story. Afilu kulanu chachamim. Even if we're all wise people. Why? Why? Because beyond Haggadah, there's also Sipur, to talk about something. And the Baal Haggadah brings a proof by then quoting the story of Rabbi Eliezer. It goes on to show you how these wise rabbis were still telling the same old story. Because even in the Sipur, you find new insight. You find new ideas. There's a function to telling the same old story. You find new applications to 2010. It's not just Haggadah tonight. It's Sipur. It's Sipur as well. Okay, let's continue. All right, Dvar Torah number 13. In the story of Rebbe Eliezer, you have this funny thing. You have these things of these students. Right, you have the Talmidim come to tell him this, the Rebbeim, that it's time for the Kriya Shema. They come in and it's time for the Kriya Shema. So the question is, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asked this, one of the great ethics teachers in the Mir Yeshiva. By the way, the years that he actually taught Mussar and ethics was a very short time period. He was mainly a Rosh Yeshiva. But the position got moved, got switched around in the Mir. Got switched around because they needed someone to give Mussar. And he became famous for the couple years that he gave his Musar Shmuz. And those became Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Those became some of the most famous Musar Shmuz. You can get them in English. The horses. All right. Now here we go. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, A Talmid doesn't mean an interpreter or a reviewer. It's not a Talmid. Talmid means a real Talmid is one who understands every case. They understand it the same way the teacher did. That's a Talmud. Once you're a true Talmud and understand everything the Rebbe was telling you without deviating one iota, then you're considered a Talmud. Where you go after that is up to you. But to say that you were a true Talmud means you understood everything fully. Where your emotion already matches your Rebbe's pshat. You can intuit where the Rebbe is going to go. That's a Talmud. So when we review a teaching of the rabbis, of Chazal, that's the greatest gratitude that we could give. Hakaras Hatov. It's recognizing that we're aligning our own understanding with the understanding of our Rebbe, of our teachers. That's the obligation. And we become students of the Haggadah. We become the new Talmidim of the Haggadah. So says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz that before we're about to begin the rest of the Haggadah, which is all interpretations, rabbinic interpretation, that's the rest of the Haggadah. The next 10 pages is all rabbinic interpretation of different lines. We're showing that we've understood the dedication and loyalty of what it means to be a Talmud. And they point that out by elucidating a story of the students coming forward to say, now is the time of Kriya Shema Rebbe. The total dedication and loyalty of a pure student. Go ahead, Bella.
Oh. Sent me an item relevant to the Rav Hashem Amro, the Gemara. I think in Masechet Sukkot says that a Talmud has to cite his Rebbe precisely.
Exactly. Afilo al hin, the Mishnah says, even on his yeses and hins, and the exact way he refers to commerce, you have to use the same language so you know precisely, you're not messing over what the Rebbe said. Okay, if you're ever deviating, you have to say clearly, this is not the words of my Rebbe. You have to say clearly. Number 15. This comes another one from the house of Mushitz. Here we go. Another one from the house of Mushitz.
I thought this
was last one was 13. Last one was... Oh, you're right. Thank you. 14. Ooh, I try to sneak one by you guys. Okay. The house of Mushitz. You know, I started telling you one... Do you guys follow the one I said from Rav Margolius? Did I? What? What did I tell from him? What do I have there? I feel like I didn't finish it.
Sipur.
Oh, Sipur versus Haggadah.
Yes.
Yeah. Hold on. Okay, fine. I'll leave that be. All right. I thought there was more. All right, fine. The Moshitz Rebbe says like this. One of the four sons discussed in the Haggadah is the Rasha, the wicked son. The wicked son says, Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. Ma ha'avodah, this is a great one. I'm telling you right now, this is a great one. Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. What's this avodah lachem? What is this lachem? It's a real Hasidic interpretation. What's this lachem, right? To you is the Rasha's chutzpah. He gives it a Hasidic twist. What's your lachem about? Where's the famous line lachem from? Well, this is the famous question of the way he phrases it. Ma avodah zos lachem. Here, you have the exact lashon. I'll read you the exact lashon. It's the famous kasha on the rush. They make the rush out to be so bad, but the rush has... Right? It's a famous kasha. What they...
They seem almost identical things.
Yeah.
Almost identical.
Here. Very slight. No, the difference is, he says, the Chacham says, Ma ha'edus v'achukem mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu eschem. He doesn't say lachem. He doesn't say lachem. To you is exclusionary. To you is exclusionary. Fine. That's fine for our Dvar Torah here. The Moshitzer Rebbe says, what's this lachem? What's this lachem about? Lachem by the Russia. What's this lachem? Like you say bread, but still the lachem. That's a real Hasidic one. Okay. So he says lachem is like this. By Shavuos we say, the Gemara's in Beitz, I'll talk about this. By Shavuos we say that Shavuos is supposed to be chetzi lahashem, chetzi lachem. Half to Hashem, half to you. Meaning you're supposed to eat, sleep, enjoy yourself, and half the time learning, and for God, half for me. That's Shavuos. Chetzi lahashem, chetzi lachem. That's lachem. There's a certain type of avoda that's called lachem that you could gain as well as a Jew. You can indulge yourself a little bit as well in Judaism. So the Rasha, says the Moshitzer Rebbe, doesn't get this religion. He wants to become a Buddhist. He wants to leave and become a Buddhist. There, I get it. I go off and I renege the worldly pleasures. I become an ascetic. What's this lachem that you Jews have? This, you get religious by eating, you get religious by involving yourself in physical things. I can't comprehend this. That's the question. The Russia's question is he doesn't understand how this religion is capable of turning the physical into spiritual. He doesn't get it. By the way, you could segue into another Dvar Torah with this. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, why don't we make a whole festive thing with a bracha when you have a pigeon a ben? If you have a firstborn child, right? A firstborn is a son. So you make a pigeon a ben. You sell the child, you buy the child back from the Kohen. Everybody makes a big simcha and they're singing. He goes, why are you singing? This child was supposed to be dedicated its entire life to the service of the Kohen, and now you bought it back to live a physical lifestyle. Why is that a simcha? Because says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the ideal of Judaism is not that it's separate and removed from everybody else. The ideal of Judaism is how now is this child, now that he's integrated back into the regular society, how is he going to thrive? How is he going to shine? That's the real test. That's a beautiful Dvar Torah from the Moshitzer Rebbe. We're up to number 16. You still can get 10 to go. 10 to go. 15. Oh, you got more. Good. Plenty left to go. There's lots to go around. All right. Yes. Oh, the physical grabbed him.
Yes.
Very good, very good. Well said, Bella, well said. Okay. Wouldn't have been the egg that did me in. Would have been the beef from the children, but we could save that. We could save that for another time. All right. Here we go. Okay, here we go. Arami Oved Avi. Arami Oved Avi. Okay? This is always one of the, you know, wild parts of the Haggadah. Wild, no, it doesn't get that wild, but it's what's it doing there moment of the Haggadah. Arami Oved Avi, that my father was an... My father, that Aramean tried to wipe out my father, talks about the story, maybe referring to Lot, how things were rough, and then ultimately we got to the, Lavan, and then ultimately we got to the story, Lot, and then ultimately we get to the story of the Bikurim. We get to the story of the first fruits, bringing the first fruits. It's that paragraph. So the question is, what's this? Why is this brought in to teach us about the Exodus? Why is this brought in out of left field? Arami Oved Avi, right? In Aramea. What's this doing here? So the Abarbanel says as follows. The Abarbanel says that the structure of the Seder is beginning with derogatory and concluding with praiseworthy. Maschilim begnus u'mesayim b'shvach. You begin in the negative and you end in the and end in the positive. Okay, you begin in the negative and end in the positive. So now, that's the same thing. Look at this paragraph. It's the same structure. It's a perfect paragraph for the Haggadah. It starts with how rough things were. Arami Ovid Avi. My father got messed around. But now we bring the Bikurim. We come up to Jerusalem and we come with a smile up into Jerusalem itself. It has the same structural pattern as the Seder itself. So that's you can't leave it that alone. You can't stop there with the Dvar Torah. Says Rav Soloveitchik, gives a different reason why this paragraph is read. Because the nature of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is about gratitude. Is about gratitude. Thanking God for taking us out of Egypt. What's the nature of the bringing of the Bikurim, bringing the first fruits? It's thanking God. It's gratitude. So Rav Soloveitchik gives a different answer. So now take the Abarbanel, take Rav Soloveitchik, and you add them together. Because the Abarbanel said the structure is the same. It's beginning in negative, ending in positive. And Rav Soloveitchik said the idea here is the themes are the same. It's about gratitude. You put the two together and the link becomes that the way to experience the feelings of gratitude is by recognizing and starting with how bad things were. It's only in that contrast, that blackwash, that does the light actually come out. So you could synthesize both together. You take the Barbanel and you take the Rav Soloveitchik and you make yourself a nice little package over there. Just to reiterate a Dvar Torah from 2 years ago that fits nicely with this, the Minchas Asher, you could add, Rav Asher Weiss says in the four questions, why those four questions? There's so many questions I could have asked. Right? There's the Haggadah they put out, the big book of why Haggadah. There's so many questions you could have asked. Minchas Asher says that each of those four questions all hover around this tension of the night. Is it about the servitude or is it about the freedom? If you look at every question, you'll see it's trying to figure out what's this night about. Which one is it? Servitude or freedom? So you could use that as a segue into the Barbanel and then you get to Rav Soloveitchik. Okay, let's continue. Dvar Torah number 16. Dvar Torah number 16. This is from a Haggadah printed in 1863, the Geulas Yisrael Haggadah. I found it on HebrewBooks.org, my favorite website. And he says as follows, right? We say in the Haggadah, V'yitnu aleinu avoda kasha. They placed upon us very difficult labor. Who's the they? And what made the labor so difficult? Who's the they? What do you mean the Egyptians? How are they in charge to make labor? The labor's imposed by the leader, the Pharaoh. Who's they? So he says a very interesting explanation. He says it was bad enough when the government imposed upon us what we need to do as slaves. But then the government turned it over and said, each of you Egyptians, get yourself a slave. And once the individual Egyptians created what they're going to do with each slave, that's when things became extremely unbearable. Vayitnu aleinu. They, as Ben said, the Egyptians, not the Pharaoh, them individually started getting a slave. That's when things became very difficult. Vayitnu aleinu. They, vayitnu aleinu avoda kasha. They placed upon us very difficult stuff. Let's continue. Right after the Vehisha Amda, we say, this comes from, by the way, Rabbi Yonason Sachs Haggadah. Not Rabbi Jonathan Sachs. Rabbi Yonason Sachs, the Y-Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Yonason Sachs put out Haggadah. They translated it also last year. And we say that after Vehi Shamda, we say, Malamid Shahayu Yisrael Mitzionim Sham Vayisham Lagoy. Showing you that the Jews stood out there and they became there a nation. They stood out there and they became there a nation. And Rabbi Yonason Sachs quotes the Ritva. The Ritva says, Mitzuyonim Sham, we stood out there. That shows you even there, Sham, even there, in those places that are so far away from where we're supposed to be, the Sham, the theirs, even in the theirs, we found an amazing light in our lives. We were able to grow in a way that we couldn't grow while back at home. Showing you that God goes with you. The Shechina is with us even in Gullus. The Shechina is with us even in exile. Says the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk, this quality came to us en route from Yaakov. We got this from Yaakov. Yaakov was prepared to live in the exile. He was willing to show the people that even in the Chashchus HaGullus, even in the darkness of exile, there could still be found the Mitzuyonim Sham. There could be found our ability to stand out, to be strong, to be bold, to be powerful. By the way, Sidevar Torah, you got to phrase it right or it can get very controversial, was said by a student of mine just this past Shabbos. He said the following. I raised the question at the table. I raised the question of, we say in the line, Ilu lo hotzianu, if we had not been taken out of Egypt, we still would have been slaves to Pharaoh. The famous line, Pharaoh's long gone. How we still have been slaves to to Pharaoh in Egypt, right? How we still, the government would have been toppled at some point. So he said as follows. Because if we still would have been there, the government wouldn't have been toppled. If we still would have been there, the government would have been toppled. We bring a certain something to the table when we're in a country. And whenever the Jews get kicked out from a country, you see everything collapse afterwards. I don't need to tell you all the examples throughout history. Just start with Spain. You go to France, go to England. Watch how the power shifted in countries that were so powerful before all the Jews were kicked out of that country, before the Jews were made to leave that country. That's the Mitzionim Sham. They stood out there. We stood out there. While we were there, we still would have been slaves because the government never would have been overthrown. It's an interesting way of looking at it. You got to be careful how you come off with that one. Now, next, number 18. We then find that Rabbi Yehuda gives the simanim. He breaks up the plagues into datzach, adash, be'achav. Okay, he breaks them up. Why does he break them up like this? Right, everybody and their sister has a Dvar Torah on this. Here's a new one. This one comes again from Rav Herschel Reisman. He says as follows. The three categories of breaking up the 10 plagues were for a very specific reason. Question number two. And here's question number two. That's question one. Question number two, why didn't God just skip to the last plague? Go straight to wiping out the firstborn. That's a game. That one is game over. One shot, game over, it would have been done. Why did we need the first nine? Okay? Why do we need the first nine? So Rav Herschel Reisman says like this, when it comes to faith in God, there are three different subjects. One, amuna in Hashem as a creator, balabayit, as a creator, owner of this world. Number two, there's faith in God in hashkacha pratis, in divine providence, God's hand in this world. And number three is emuna. There's a third type of faith.
Can you do the one?
Sure. One is faith in God as creator, as the owner, the boss. Number two is God as the controller. And number three is God as the miracle worker. Those are the three positions of faith for God in history. So, says Rav Herschel Reisman, these makos were one big musar shmuz to the Jews who were just learning to develop their faith. Take the first three set, datzach, dam, tzvardeya, kinim. What is that? That's about the existence of God. They had never seen this before. Here they are. God is going to show his power, water to blood. I could repopulate, I could regenerate frogs. I could fill the entire land with lice. There is a power here. The first epitomized this power of a creator. He could create. I could create a new entity. Then you have Adash. Adash, the next three, exemplifies divine providence in this world. What's Adash? You have that God's control. I can make the animals go wild in a moment. Then you have You also, look at the boils. The boils, I can actually make the boil distinguish between Jews and Egyptians. I can make selection of who it affects. I can pinpoint who I want this to affect. With the animals dying in the pestilence, I could decide which animals are going to live and die. The Jewish animals lived. I could decide, distinguish. That's God's hand in destiny. And the third set of faith is God as the miracle worker. That's Ba'achav. Because Ba'achav, you have the barad, you have the hail. Hail was fire and ice in one. How does that work? How does fire and ice stay together? That's Barad. You have then, you look at all of these, the Choshech, darkness. Look at the dark and the light. I could take the light and I could turn it into a dark entity. That's the miracle power. There's supposed to be a set time for day, set time for night. What's going on over here? I could wipe that out. Yes?
Well, why can't you say that the verse 6 are also miracles?
Yeah, you could play around with it. But for sure. But tread carefully and you have a nice Dvar Torah. Okay, next one. What? Published.
Under what name?
Oh, no, not published. You have to buy it, I think, maybe through the family or something.
Wait a minute.
We can get it through Avi. Mention it to Avi. You'd love to get it. What?
Where's the third quality? You said there was one.
Yeah, the third one is the miracle worker. The miracle is changing the course of nature. Changing the course of nature. Okay. Number 19. Sorry, number 19. I skipped one, so my count's been off the whole night. Number 19. This comes from Rav Gordimer, who is actually, he works at the OU, at YU, a teacher at YU. Very interesting insight.
I'm related to him.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Look at that. Diane's cousin. Diane's cousin, for those listening on the audio. Okay, and play date. And we also have play. Someone has a play. Thank you. Play dates and cousins here. All right. Rav Gordimer.
He's a very nice guy.
Says, after saying Dayenu at the Seder, we read the, right, Dayenu. If it would have been enough if you just would have done this. This alone would have been great. After that, we have another funny paragraph. Al achas kama v'kama. How much more so? When not only did this, but you also did that. And you also did this. And then you also did that. Al achas kama v'kama. Another different structure. So, it's really, if you look at the al achas kama v'kama, it's repeating everything the Dayenu is doing. So why do that? So Rav Gordimer says, each is giving you totally different perspective on God's miracles. Dayenu is saying, God, every miracle alone would have been enough. Dayenu, each one alone would have been enough to praise you. Everything would have been enough. What's the al-achas kama v'kama doing? The al-achas kama v'kama is showing you, but man, when I view it in such a pattern of divine providence, of how everything led from one to the other, boy, when I see the totality of the whole picture of how we got from point A to B to C and D and everything happened in the right time, then you're overwhelmed with a different sense of gratitude altogether. Dayenu is gratitude over each individual action alone was enough for gratitude. Dal achas kama v'kama is gratitude over the totality of what happened there. Which reminds me of another Dvar Torah, very nice, on Yisro, where it says, V'yich Yisro al akol, that Yisro rejoiced over everything when he gets to Moshe. V'yich Yisro al akol, Moshe changes up his whole governance and everything. So Rabbi Nachman of Breslov says, what do you mean al hakol? He rejoiced over everything. What over everything? Rabbi Nachman said, when he heard and saw what was going on here, he appreciated God's hand in the entire world. He realized that everything is coming from one source. For example, this is the analogy Rabbi Nachman gives. You go to a wedding, you could enjoy the meal, you could enjoy the dancing, you could be happy for the groom and bride, but it's all disjointed pieces of happiness. But when you realize it's all coming from one source, all of this happiness is coming from one source, it comes unified and the joy collides within you. That's what happened with Yisro. When Yisro realized that the unity of everything good that's happening in the world right now is coming from one unified source from God, that's when he, like, V'yicha means like goosebumps. He chills through such joy over what happened. Okay, that's Rabbi Nachman of Breslov's edition. You could add on to here. Number 20. This comes from one of the first students of the Baal Shem Tov, Rabbi Pinchas Koritzer, the great Hasidic Rebbe who was known for always telling the truth. Rabbi Pinchas Koritzer, the man of truth. So he looks at the line, Ilu ichalnu et aman, if you just would have given us the man and did not give us the Shabbos, dayenu. If you just would have given us the man and we didn't get to the Shabbos, dayenu. So he asks a great question. I never heard this question asked before, and it's an interesting one. The mitzvah of Shabbos came first. That was at Mara. It was one of the special, unique mitzvahs that were given at Mara, was Shabbos. The man fell afterwards at Elim. Right? You had Mara, and then afterwards was Elim. So the order should have been reversed. If you just would have given the Shabbos, Dayenu, right? You didn't need to give us the, and didn't give us the man, Dayenu. Why does it say the man before the Shabbos? Shabbos hit first in the order of things. So his answer is very creative. He quotes a Rashi to Shmos 16:22. On the pasuk that says Lechem Mishnah. Why is it called Lechem Mishnah when the man fell double? Rashi says Lechem Mishunah. It's different. It's improved. It's changed. What does that mean? On Shabbos, it came with improved taste and smell. It was Superman. On Shabbos, you had Superman. On Shabbos, during the week, you had regular man. On Shabbos, you had Superman. So therefore, that's what this line means. Ilu echalnu es aman. If you just would have given us the regular man, v'lo nasan lanu es haShabbos, and you wouldn't have given us the super Shabbos man, dayenu, we would have been fine too. But you had to give us this fabulous, amazing super Shabbos man. Okay? That's 20. That's our Torah number 20. Okay. Number 21. This comes from the Baal, the Berdichever, Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. He says as follows. We say matzah zu, right? This matzah. So it's a little story. It's time to break up the Seder with a little story. So when the holy Berditchever got to this line about the matzah, he got so excited that he fell off his chair under the table. And literally, they say the plate of matzahs would fall over. There's many stories like this, by the way, of Relates for Ditchev. He once knocked all the schmaltz, the fish schmaltz, onto the Noam Elimelech's brother. There's a lot of stories of him knocking over plates because he gets so excited on Shabbos.
Wasn't a heavy drinker?
What?
Wasn't a heavy drinker?
It's unclear at the time. So Relates for Ditchev, so was so excited, the plate of matzahs would totally fall over. When he would get up, he would try to calm himself down. And to calm himself down, he would say, like this, matzah zu, you know, like, this matzah, you know, that, whoa, you matzah, you know, like trying to calm down, pointing at that matzah. I know what you're trying to do to me. He would say, matzah zu, this matzah. That's how you do it to calm him down. I saw a YouTube video. You can see a YouTube video. It almost has as many hits as the girl crying about Justin Bieber. It's the video with the Amshinova Rebbe. The Amshinova Rebbe is holding a Kiddush cup, shaking. The Amshinova Rebbe is holding a Kiddush cup, not the Amshinova, the Tosh Rebbe, and he's doing the same thing. On the Motzi, on the Challah. He's trying to get a hold of himself because he's getting so into it. Amotzi, Amotzi, Lechem, Lechem. You've got to see this online, YouTube. Look up the Tosh Rebbe Challah. Okay, look it up. It's fantastic. Okay, where were we? We're up to 21. Okay, 21. Oh, that was 21. Next.
No, you finish it.
That's it. That's all I got to say. You, this matzah, zoo. This one, you, he was talking to it, like trying to calm it down. Don't do this to me again. Yes, I was thinking that, I didn't say it. I was thinking, very good. You. From, what's that from again? From,
Analyze
This, for those listening over audio. Okay. All right. Number 22.
Wait a minute, that has a spiritual dimension also.
Analyze This?
Yeah.
All right, we can do a chabura on it next week. What?
No,
oh. Oh, yeah. That's the spiritual dimension. He related to it in a direct way. Yeah.
Yeah. The Berditchever,
exactly.
As opposed to the Musarniks who were challenging him at the time.
You make of it as you need to. Exactly. 100. Oh, it's all of these. You could take these far. All of these ones.
But it has a very Hasidish, the spiritual. He was so overwhelmed by.
Like, he's overwhelmed by the mitzvah. Exactly. Beautiful, Dan. Thank you. Next one. Here we go. We say lafikach. We pick up the cup again.
Wait. No, seriously. I think this teaches. I apologize for interrupting.
It's
but
okay.
I think this teaches us something. We're so used to every year. We do Pesach, we clean,
excellent. The way he related to the matzahs was so fresh and so new.
That's why
I was once by the Amshinova Rebbe. I saw the Amshinova Rebbe laning the Torah. And he, when he was reading the parts about the Jews in Egypt of the plagues, that's what I saw him read. He jumped back, like he recoiled, like as though the plagues were happening in real time. And he was watching it. It was like, I saw it. His face was like he was scared to wit's end, like he was seeing it for the first time, literally. And that's how they relate to it.
It's a larger spiritual commentary on why you need to reconnect to what this is really
beautiful.
About, not just orthodox.
Diane, run with this Dvar Torah at the Seder. It's all yours. All right, here we go. Next one. What? Yamshinova in Israel.
Yeah, my uncle is a chassid of him.
What? He's a chassid of him? Yeah, the Amshinova Rebbe. If you want to get into the Amshinova Rebbe, you never know. You leave a message, you can get the call 4 in the morning. Come see him 2 in the morning. You never know the times. All right, here we go. Next. Number 22. We're winding down. I'm running out. Lefikach anachnu chayavim lahodos. We lift up the cup and we say, therefore, we're obligated to thank for the miracles, sha'asa lavotenu velanu, that were done for our fathers and for us. So the question that I found in a Haggadah's Beis Yisrael. I don't know who wrote it. Found the Haggadah without the front page, so I can't tell you who wrote it. The Haggadah's Beis Yisrael said, but if you notice on the paragraph, right before we get to the eating, it's the paragraph, the bracha of Asher Golanu, right? The bracha of the redemption, where you eat the next, drink the next cup of wine. There, it's reversed. You say us before you refer back to the fathers, where we came from. So why is the order reversed? Why over here by Lafikach it's Lavoseinu and Lanu, while by the Geula, by the redemption, we go Lanu Ula Avoteinu. So he answers as follows. The answer, he says, is because we're first thanking that it's because of the merit of our fathers that they got out, that we're able to be here today. Once we could express that because of our parents, their merit, that we got out and we could be here today to tell the story, the next time around when we get to the bracha, we relate to it from our sense of feeling redemption. Wow, that you did this to us. We thank, this one was about lafika chayvim lahodo, to thank. The gratitude should come first to how we got here from our great-great-great-grandparents. Now, once we've had that focus, we can now turn it into how we're feeling ourselves specifically. Okay? Next. Yes. Okay, we got to find the Yudalov index. We're going to look at the Yudalov index to find out whose is this Haggadah. Shkoyach, winding down. A couple more left and we'll stop. Here we go. This one comes from Rav Soloveitchik. On the Pesach night, we break up the Hallel into two segments, dividing both parts by a meal in between. We never do that. Why are we breaking up the Hallel like this? Why are we doing that? What? This is from Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik says that Pesach night has two motifs. One, you thank God for the historical redemption. Thank God for the historical redemption. And the next one is to personally experience or to re-experience the redemption. That's the split. The first Hallel is thanking God for the past, the history. You break it up with a meal because the meal is taking you now in your present moment of feeling that gratitude. I'm eating, I'm living, I'm alive, I'm well, I'm good. Now when you refer to your redemption, you're ready to talk about you. Before, you weren't ready to so much to talk about you. You got to refer to the history. Now that you're eating and you're alive, you could now talk about the next part, which is the future and your constant salvation from God. Okay, this comes from the Rabbi Lam Haggadah. This is a great one. This is a classic. This will be a famous piece from the Rabbi Lam Haggadah years going forward. This is on reclining. So Rabbi Lam says, why? By the way, if you want to recline at your Seder and your chair has no armrests, what do? Little trick, by the way. Look at this. You turn your chair to the side, and the back of your chair becomes your armrest. Is that a good one? That's free of charge. All right. Here we go. Now.
Which Rabbi Lam?
Rabbi Norman Lam. Just put out a gutta. The Royal Table. Rabbi Lam, page 85 of the Royal Table. Why lean to the left? Why recline? So the Gemara says, hygiene, not to choke, right? But beyond that, we know that Chazal gave other reasons. Symbols of freedom. So Rabbi Lam asked a great question. Why did we adopt a symbol of freedom that was unique to the Romans? The way they would eat, sprawled out, laying out. There's so many beautiful Jewish customs. We had to take the Roman one. So says Rabbi Lam, our Seder is incomplete. There's no Korban Pesach. So much is missing because the Romans destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. We're in exile because the Romans sent us into exile. So ironically, we recline to show a great Zecher Lemikdash. We remember our temple while those who ravaged it are no longer here. We recline to remember our temple while those who sacked it are no longer around. Rabbi Lam, that's gonna be in the top 10 in the next few years. All right. Let's close with a good one. Let's close with a good one here. Oh, there's so many more. Okay, I'm going to close with... Alright, I'll close with... Alright, I'll go with the Hasidic one. This comes from the Avnei Nezer, the Rebbe of Sokachov. The Avnei Nezer, the Rebbe of Sokachov. One of the psukim in the Torah say, Sheshes yamim tochal matzas ubeyom ha-shvi atzeres. Right, you're supposed to eat the matzah, whatever, 6 days, 7 days, confusion in the psukim, and all the Rishonim deal with that, not for now. The Zohar to Parshas Tetzaveh, I quoted a piece of the Zohar before, says that achilas matzah, eating matzah for the 7 days of Pesach, he refuas la nefesh. It's healing for the soul. It's a refua. And when you do that, says the Zohar, the chametz the rest of the year can't touch you. When you eat the matzah for 7 days, it heals the soul in such a way that all... Because, right, the question is, if chametz is so bad, why do Jews eat it the rest of the year? Right, if chametz is seen as the Yetzer Hara, evil, the evil incarnate, why are we eating it the rest of the year? Should ban it for Jews.
Destroys the
Mogen. What? Destroys the... So why do we still eat it? So because we're able to withstand it. Because eating matzah for those days protects us from the chametz on the other days. So here's what the Avnei Nezer adds. This is great. He says, what does that mean? You eat it for 7 days, you're able to withstand the effects of chametz? So comes the Rambam in Hilchas Shavuos. Pulls a Rambam out of left field. Rambam in Hilchas Shavuos says, if someone takes an oath, nishpa shelo yochal klum, if a person says they're not going to eat anything at all, in general, not eat anything at all for 7 days, it's considered a shvua shav, a worthless and wrong shvua, and we give him lashes for saying such a thing. If someone says they're not going to eat food for 7 days, we consider it a faulty shvua, a worthless shvua, and it's considered to like taking God's name in vain almost. Why? Because you see that for 7 days, according to halacha, it's not possible to live. You can't live for 7 days. 7 days without food, you kill yourself. You kill yourself. Says the Avinezer, putting this all together, that's what the Zohar's teaching you. 7 days without something, you kill it. What you do, 7 days without chametz, you've killed the part of us that lives for chametz, that lives for that, seeks that whatever the spiritual effects are of the chametz, that seeks for it. You've killed it. So even if you eat it afterwards, it doesn't do nearly the same thing that it could have done to you. That's what it means. You eat matzah for those days. It says, though, and you beat the chametz that you're going to eat for the rest of the year. That's the pshat. Because you've killed the life that chametz could have sown within you. There's so much more to say. We will stop here for now for this year's 26 new things to say on the Seder. I think I might have just done 25. That's the first sheet I sent out at 25. Thank you.